Micah Yai, welcome to KABU.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here.
Micah Yai is a teacher, taught many years in the public schools in and around Portland. She's now a teacher of teachers and a supervisor of student teachers interning in classrooms. She identifies herself as a passionate literacy educator who advocates for children from all backgrounds. So, Micah Yai, you've been doing this for, 20-some years now, I think, looking at your vita. Seen a lot of schools and their programs. Your research was in teaching reading, and you know that literature. Give us an overview of teaching reading. What's been learned? What are the basic principles and practices that help children to learn to read and love learning and want to understand and express themselves, which really is the idea of an elementary school?
It really is. I would say that one of the key ingredients for helping children learn how to read is giving them time to read, giving them books that they want to read and interact with. Having them understand stories, and then being really strategic in how you go about teaching them how to read those books. So, I mean, first you really want kids interacting with books that they love, having time to talk about those books, look at the pictures in the books, start understanding the words of those books, seeing themselves within the book, so having materials that are really culturally appropriate and responsive, and then slowly teaching them the skills that they need for reading.
Yeah, it seems sort of natural if you just look at your own life. Well, I learned how to read. Mm-hmm. But really, it's like learning the violin. It seems to me that there are all of these intellectual, mental skills that have to be developed to really read well and to read with understanding and to be able to put yourself into the story and read, you know, as sort of a participant observer almost. And in a discussion with the author, all those things are not natural. They really are developed in the same way that a violin, you know, or learning a musical instrument.
Right.
Good teaching then somehow helps develop that.
Absolutely.
How do you deal with that as a teacher of teacher?
Yeah, I would say that that's absolutely true. You are developing those skills. You want kids to have a lot of opportunity where they are navigating language and understanding that there are stories in books, that books have meaning, that when they read something, it's for understanding. There are a lot of reading programs that are really just looking at skills of reading versus really comprehension. And comprehension is really that outcome that you want students to have. And so when we work with our teacher candidates, we want them to understand that they, when they're in their classroom with kids, they are going to help kids break reading down and then put those pieces back together. So they need to understand letter sounds. They need to be able to chunk words. So they need to do these phonetic skills.
All of those skills.
Right. And a lot of ways that classroom teachers can help students with reading is to give them opportunities to write. Write is one of the best reading instructional tools where they have time to write what they want to write, write stories, and then they're navigating letter sounds and putting those together and understanding that what they write and what they read, there should be meaning to that.
Right. But that's, of course, all motivated. People want to be part of the group, and they want to express themselves, and they want to be liked and appreciated. And that's a way of gaining it. So there's tremendous motivation, I think, in children to learn. And that's what sort of drives it. But you have to give them an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And not just discipline and constantly rote learning as if, in fact, which is only done to poor people.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I think a lot of times, you're right, where kids will be, before they get to the good parts, teachers will say, well, until you can understand your phonics, you don't get to have time to read for pleasure, which is actually counterproductive because what you want is kids sitting down and having that opportunity and that time. In elementary classrooms, and actually I believe older kids too, you should have time to sit down, write freely, and read books you want to read, even if you're just reading the pictures and sitting down with a buddy and going through the pictures together,
and
having that time.
And reading and drawing, expression is sort of, you can draw and read at the same time. These kids with a book that you can even draw on, although some of them do, they have the opportunity and to practice letters and all of them, and then to express it, if you break it down into all of the things that happen, it's so complicated. creating a really good reader and someone able to articulate. And you have years of practice, like in a violin. It takes 10 years to be really good. Well, it takes more than that to be really, really good. The intellectual skills are so complicated and need practice. But of course, people want to do that. Once they begin understanding, they want to understand more. It's not like it's a huge burden, like in playing a good instrument.
Right. Well, that's true. Once you start understanding that letters can be put together to make words, and that if you're on the bus or in a car and you see signs, you want to read all of that environmental print. And that's a lot of impetus. You see other kids doing those things in a classroom. There'll be someone who, you could ask children, who's a good reader in this classroom? And usually they want to be like that person because they know there is meaning in books and they want to be able to have access. It helps kids. They feel smart. They feel accomplished. And everybody wants those things.
What about children from homes where parents cannot provide, as generally in many affluent homes, where they just don't have the capacity or the time or can build the experiences or even provide the sort of health care and food that kids need and who are always moving around? How about these children? Do they need a kind of a different curriculum or do they just have to start the curriculum a little earlier? I'm asking that because there are so many, and indeed some educators who have different curriculums for the different classes for kids who are doing poorly or don't have the skills that others have when they come into kindergarten. They're cordoned off and given junk stuff rather than real literacy materials. So. Right. I gather you find that to be revolting.
I do. You can see me shaking my head. I think first thing is the notion that a kid coming into kindergarten, you hear this often, that they're not ready for school or that they're behind. And it's my belief that if a child comes into kindergarten, you can't be behind. That's where everybody has started. And so it's the role of the teacher then to make sure that whatever you think kids need that they aren't getting outside of the classroom that would help them be successful in school, you are going to provide that within the classroom. So instead of giving children whose families may not have books in their home, whose parents are working swing shifts where they don't have time to help their kids with literacy, where their first language at home may not be English, whatever it is, you are going to end up providing them with time to do the same things that you would for kids who already have some of those pieces in place that help them be more successful in this system. So there's some strategies that you can help families with that are that when I've worked with kindergarten parents who are from, let's say, lower incomes or are working different shifts where they don't have time to work with their kids because they're at work, is you can teach them how to talk to them about oral storytelling. You can have them write little notes back and forth to their children. There's different strategies you can do. If you're on the bus or in the car, you can look for some of those signs, and you could just have conversations with your children so they get more words. The main thing to think about with reading is kids who navigate, if you encounter more words, your vocabulary increases, and the more words you have, the more words you will learn, and so on.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick talking to Michael Yai, a teacher, taught many years in the public schools around Portland. She's now a teacher of teachers and supervises the teacher training programs. We've been talking about the qualities of a good reading program and a good school and that all children will want to learn, but we have to tailor some of it, the readings and discussions, to individual kids. I guess that's why teachers want to have smaller classes. When you have 40 young kids in a classroom, you just can't. It's both emotional for young kids. It's an emotional bond with the teacher as well as having a special sort of, treating each kid individually. You can't do it, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's really challenging because when you need to have the relationships with kids, and then you need teachers who they understand the needs of each child. And if you have 20 children versus 30 children, I mean, the work just grows exponentially. And so if you really want teachers to help kids with reading, the classes do need to be relatively small so they can help them. One thing that teachers who are skilled in reading instruction know is they need to find the right books for kids. And they need to help kids understand how to find those books for themselves so they become independent readers. And you want them to have books that they can practice things with, books that they can enjoy, books, you can a whole variety of books, but it takes time to teach kids that. And then the teacher is monitoring those kids, meeting with kids who need extra or a push forward. But to really understand their needs, there needs to be fewer kids in a classroom. If there's too many, it's really impossible.
Yeah, you know, rich people in this country who are organized to push at the schools, they insist that class size really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's just teacher, if they're good, they're good, and regardless of class size. And yet when they send their kids to private schools, they not only have 10 or 12 kids in the class, they have more than one teacher and more than one aide and give a huge amount of individual attention to some kids who may need it. But for the rest of the people, that's completely unnecessary, I guess. I mean, that seems to me where what we've come into in the United States now is we can't afford to teach these kids, but of course they can afford anything for their children. And what they choose is to create privileged, highly privileged and kids with skills, at least.
Well, two things that are interesting, well, a lot that's interesting in what you said, but two things that kind of stand out to me, first of all, is the notion that teachers, you know, it's a gift or teachers can just do it. Because actually, I mean, it takes a lot of skills to be able to be a teacher. And I know I work with my teacher candidates all the time where they feel like there is this mantra that, oh, you must just, you know, some of these teachers are just gifted. They just naturally do it. And no, there's a lot of skills that teachers are building and building. It's a lot of work to build those skills. And if you want to have people who really understand reading and children, it's a lot of work for them to understand that. We don't want reading programs that de-skill those teachers. We want them to have those skills. There are some places really close to Portland that actually have put money into low-income schools right across the river in Evergreen School District, and some of their low-income elementary schools, their kindergarten are capped, I think it's at around 20, and if it goes above 24, the teacher gets an assistant in the classroom. They have a, in some of the schools, they have reading specialists that are assigned part-time to a grade level where they get a lot of support, and so they have chosen to put their money that direction. There's other districts, you know, this side of the Columbia River where the class sizes get really big for young children, and that's where you do see kids falling through the cracks. I've yet to meet a teacher who didn't want to do well. My own kids have, my son just graduated from Portland Public Schools, and I have a daughter who's in 11th grade in Portland Public Schools. They have had excellent teachers. It's not the teachers. It's the system that puts too many children into classrooms, programs that de-skill teachers of young children, and then, of course, the social issues that come along with poverty and those sorts of issues, mobility. I would say there are a lot of things in the Portland area that are going well, too. Like, a lot of teachers have embraced doing writing workshops and doing reading workshops where there are more choices. I think it's really teaching, helping support teachers understand, give them time to get to know their children, probably fewer mandates for data tracking, but if they are tracking data on kids, helping them understand how to use that for real instructional purposes instead of collecting data that goes into a district office. It's really using it for instruction and helping kids, helping teachers understand how to structure their room giving them the opportunity to structure their classroom so they have kids have the time, and also teachers can use the skills that they have. Teachers who are coming into the profession who have been around a long time, they have a lot of skills, and we want them to use those skills with children. And giving them the opportunity to use those skills is just critical.
This is your Old Mo Variety Hour on KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick talking to Micah Yai, who has taught for years as well as now is a professor at Portland State and teaches teachers and also supervises new teachers in schools and has seen many, many, many schools. Micah Yai, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Bill. Always enjoy it.
Now, a good friend of mine sat with me and he cried. He told me a story, I know he hadn't lied. He said he went for a job, and this the man said, without an education, you might as well be dead. Now, don't get me wrong, he said, it's not who you are, but people come to me from a near and